All right, thank you so much. I think all of us that live in this public universe in various ways, we know that the voice of the citizens really is the thing that makes a difference. So public outreach is really important, and I think we have learned that lesson. When done well, it makes projects go much better. When done not so well, we all have those experiences as well. So I really, this to me brings together all the parts of my own life that I love, local elected official and health and citizen engagement. So it's really a great combination. So thank you all for being here. So let me start. I'm 5 minutes behind. I'm feeling high pressure now. I'm going to call up our two speakers. And I recognize Steve. You must be Supervisor Wagon because I can look at you too. Come on up. I wanted to ask, do you have people on the phone that are listening to this? Or is there anyone on the line? Or is there something we should worry about in terms of audio?
I have people on the phone, but they're fine.
Okay. So I think in the interest of time, I would direct you to their bios. Supervisor Wagon is from Placer County. Thank you for making the drive down here. Been a supervisor for 19 years?
20. That's 20. An awful long time.
You, let's help him. Stay with a smile on your face. 20 years. Right? Good. Okay, we were all younger when you started, but we did that. So thank you for your service. And Steve Frisch is the CEO of the Sierra Business Council based in Stockton, I think, if I got that right.
No, Truckee.
I didn't have it right. Truckee. Close.
So we work in the
North
Sierra Nevada.
North-ish. All right. So, welcome to both of you. Please take a look at their bios for more information. Did you draw straws on who was going to go first?
It's
you,
Rob. As the 20-year elected official, he has
credit. All right.
I didn't have a choice. So, yeah, so first of all, I'm as stupid as I look. I have 3 years of, and I'm just starting a new term in January, specific to why I'm here to talk. So hopefully I have some comments that are of interest or parallel. I'm going to essentially tell you the story of what we think is relevant that may be of use to you. And if I say anything that may be helpful, don't hesitate to contact me later. I'll be available. It's been an interesting journey with a lot of twists and turns. So my friends here that know me will tell you that I love to tell stories and I could go on forever, but I know we're going to be very brief but I have a lot of other things that I could share if I have of interest. So first thing I want to point out, and full disclosure for a politician, is that we have not yet completed what I'm going to be talking about. We're very close, I'm sure. And what we are about to complete actually has been done before in different places, but not at the level, not as comprehensively as we are about to complete. It actually will be the first time that we've done that something like this has been done in the nation at this level. So our story is starts in 1994. Before I was on the Board of Supervisors, I started in 95. But it starts with our general plan. The county had adopted a new general plan. In our county, essentially, urban residential growth is directed to the cities. So by definition, most of our general plan talks about open space, the importance of that to the county. It's also important to know that in Placer County, we have been one of the fastest growing counties in the country for a 20, 25 year run, sometimes at the very top of the peak in some years. And so it's changed dramatically. I grew up there. I actually live on the small farm that I grew up on now. There are about six times more people in the county than there was when I was a kid growing up. And for a lot of us who've lived there for a long time, we did not want our county to turn into the Bay Area or Southern California or even Sacramento County. It was a model and a look that we wanted to preserve. And it actually was one of the reasons why so many people were moving to the county. So with the open space work being completed in 94 and 97, I had makeup on the board that was interested in looking at a more proactive approach for implementing the general plan, which essentially, again, talks about strategic ways by which we should do land planning that preserves open space for recreation. And agricultural component is very important to us, and the quality of life overall. So, in a nutshell, in about a two-year period, we did complete rather quickly policy that put the county into the business of proactively preserving open space, usually by buying conservation easements on property, and in some cases buying outright pieces of property. Our flagship, in my opinion, transaction is about an 1,100-acre park in the foothills, about 400 to 1,000 feet elevation, 3 miles of a gorgeous little stream running through it that actually houses salmon and steelhead runs to some extent. But it's extremely popular. It's heavily used by hikers, day hikers, horseback people. But we've preserved something like 10,000 acres, either in partnership or in single transactions in the county. And we've spent about $11 million doing all of that. Much of our money came from grants. Because we got into that business, there was a huge amount of grants that were available to us, even for the planning process, that would not have been available had we not put in place that program. One of the keys to our success was making sure we had genuinely a collaborative and open-ended process. Because of the growth issue, it was a tremendous wedge driver. It was the wedge in county politics at that time. So there were horrible feuds between, of course, the environmental community, the development community, the ag community, and a lot of our new urban residents who just moved there and decided that nobody else should be allowed to come to Placer County. I've attended a lot of meetings where I've actually asked people to raise their hands as to how long they've lived here and pointed out that if they hadn't moved here, we wouldn't be having a meeting. So the board had, I think, a good sense of who and what they represented and confidence, and we wanted to genuinely open up our process. So as we started the first policy part of work, we had a citizens advisory committee that had two representatives from the development community, two representatives from the environmental community, two representatives from the ag community, and other stakeholders that were important and fit our particular setting. And we knew that there were people on that committee who genuinely didn't like each other, that would probably choose not to stay in the same room together. And we asked them to meet for a full year and bring back in public settings with them recommendations to the Board of Supervisors as to what the plan should look like. We always started with the idea that we were going to talk about having a habitat conservation plan, natural communities conservation plan, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. So we put in place working groups with regulatory agencies, Army Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife Service, California Fish and Game at the time, now Fish and Wildlife, EPA. So we developed relationships with those folks. And we also had a science working group so that we would have good science as related to the regulatory issues that were going to be emerging. So after 2 years, we got into the business of buying properties and these conservation easements that I mentioned. And then that actually was very controversial, very dramatic, but it was a 5-0 vote all the way from the beginning up through about the first 3 years of implementation. And I think a great political story that's interesting in and of itself. So then we started the next phase, which was to try to develop this policy regarding the Habitat Conservation Plan, which is now called the Placer County Conservation Plan. And the way I describe it, it's a lot of things, but it's essentially negotiating away from the state and federal regulatory agencies their environmental permitting authority that occurs when development is going forward. So in other words, in our neck of the woods, we have a lot of vernal pools, and if you impact vernal pools, you have to offset the impact of that somewhere. Excuse me. So the notion is that when you go through the county regulatory process of getting your entitlement, if you're going to build a project, let's say a 1,000 home development, you will also get your environmental permits from the county. And to the fullest extent possible, we want it to be one-stop shopping. The deal on the environmental side was that the conservation of the results from that will be far better. So, for example, there are 404 permits that were issued to develop a Galleria mall in Roseville, and there's 10 or so acres of mitigation property that is now surrounded by urbanization. And some of these properties don't even function as the habitat that they were preserved, set aside to provide for. So we have a map that has a reserve area that's in our agricultural open space zone. We're committing to not rezoning any of that for development for a 50-year period. That will be the term of these contracts with the regulatory agencies. And we think the whole system will work much better. But that's when we started this process, that's when the contentious has really started. It was really hard to get the development community on the same page with the environmental community. A lot of reasons for that I won't talk about right now. but we stuck with it. And I think we're probably 2 years away from actually implementation, but only because we have to go through about 18 months of environmental review for the program itself. So the takeaways, I think, from that are that benefits can be huge. If you have a 50-year plan that's collaborative in nature, that's multi-agency, both jurisdictions as well as with regulatory agencies, as well as with, for example, our planning for transportation modes, and you're thinking, well, you know, this is what we have for the next 50 years, and it's not open-ended. So if we have to plan for getting a major road put in place, this is our chance to do it, so we better do it right, and we better raise enough money, and we better do the conservation right, and in a way that is beneficial to the citizens who live here. As I mentioned, there's also a huge amount of money available that's not available if you don't do something like this. And even though there's contentiousness, you create a forum by which some of the stakeholders who don't necessarily share the same views, to say the least, at least are sort of forced to sit down and deal with each other. And it's a formalized method by which that percolates up to the, in our case, it's the Board of Supervisors and the City of Lincoln, which will be the fastest growing city over the next 20 to 40 years. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve, and thank you for the opportunity.
I think Robert is a little modest about what the scope of this project is, actually. At the end of the day, the county will be able to do permitting for the Endangered Species Act, the California Endangered Species Act. It will control permitting for wetlands mitigation under the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and essentially the Regional Water Quality Control Board. In exchange for that, in exchange for identifying the areas of the county that can be developed at density, there will be about 65,000 acres of open space protection and a mitigation fee structure put in place that will pay for that, which is roughly, what, $1.2 billion, something in that area. So over the next 50 years, it will identify the developed area of the county, the preserved area of the county, and pay for it, which is a pretty ambitious program. As you can imagine, the public involvement side of that has been really interesting. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about public involvement in this process and then make some observations about some other processes around the state. So Sierra Business Council, the organization I work for, is a regional network of about 4,000 small and medium-sized businesses, local governments, community organizations, from what is largely a rural region of the state. But coming from a rural area, the reality is you have lower resources, and you have to learn how to collaborate in order to get more done. So we have focused a lot of our attention in our 20 years on tracking collaborative processes around the state and the country, and training people to participate in collaborative processes. As a matter of fact, we had a week-long training seminar that we've done on and off for about 20 years called the Sierra Leadership Institute that's graduated about 350 people in how to participate in collaborative community involvement processes. So that was kind of the background that we brought to the Placer, Legacy Program in 1998?
Before that.
A little long time ago. These things take a long time, like progress, actually, I think, takes a really long time. And I know that many of you are in public agencies that do pretty in-depth public outreach processes. And I want to be careful here that we differentiate between public outreach and collaboration, because I actually think they're two different things. One is marketing and public relations. The other one is incorporating the values of everyone else in your community and learning to love them enough to take them on as your own. And that's a very different story. So in the Placer Legacy process, I think Robert touched on something that was incredibly important. That is, the county itself had a policy framework in place that was the foundation upon which the program was built. So the reality is, those commitments, that the values that underlie the program were adopted before the program actually started to get off the ground, right? And it was managed through a pretty vigorous, like 12 to 18 month public outreach process that included collaborative working groups that essentially made recommendations for how the policy should be developed. And there were three working groups. So one was a science advisory group, because in this case, this was looking at threatened and endangered species issues. There was a group of 11 or 12 scientists that were specialists in a variety of different areas that looked at the policy, its impact on species, and made policy recommendations based on essentially what those impacts and what the future viability of the species in the region would be. So there was an entire independent third-party process to vet the science from a relatively diverse group of participants. I would argue that that approach could actually be used for any important large-scale public policy process. It just so happens in this case, it was a threatened and endangered species policy process. The second group was an interagency working group that included all of the local governments that had signed on to advancing the program. And in some cases, those were special districts, in some cases, counties or cities. But it also included state and federal regulatory agencies. So they actually had a seat at the table in the design of the plan. And all of these meetings, of course, were public and publicly noticed, and public, you know, forums were done and workshops to open that information to the public throughout the process. And the third committee was the group that Robert referenced, which was the Citizens Advisory Committee, whose role was really to take the information from the staff, take the information from the Science Advisory Group, take the information from the Interagency Working Group, vet it, open it up to the public, and in many cases, change recommendations along the way, which at times were, I think, could have been really uncomfortable. And then advance that to the Board of Supervisors, who was the eventual kind of governing authority in the process, right? But I think what I noticed was that a really curious thing started to happen, and that is that the interaction between the information flowing between the groups and the people in the Citizens Advisory Group, the relationships that were built had become so strong that they really did begin to take on each other's values. So I saw, you know, executives from the Building Industry Association arguing the case of the Sierra Club. And I saw people from community organizations saying, well, wait a minute, this might affect my community, but, you know, it's for the greater good. So we kind of have to do it, right? Which is kind of a rare thing to see in a public participation process. So that was how it worked through Placer Legacy. And it kind of leads me to some observations about the point that we really do need a new definition of public outreach. That public outreach is not just about marketing. It's about internalizing the values of our entire community and acting for the common good. And that we are really being driven there in these large-scale planning processes. And that in the long run, that will make us a stronger and more democratic society that I think everyone benefits from at the end of the day. And there were like seven values that I saw come out in this process and that we have tracked for about 10 or 15 years. Number one was the importance of careful planning and preparation in advance. Not only do you have the policy framework, but you have professional organizations like the COG and their staff or others that can work on the design of the process. The organization of the stakeholders to be prepared to participate, to really understand what's going on in advance of getting in the room and having to make a policy decision, right? The data that needs to come to the table so that people are making really informed decisions. And then people on the staff and in the process who are trained to listen to what people's needs really are. So many times people come to a meeting and they say, I want this. And what they really mean is, the community or the people I represent need this. And they're not always talking about their needs up front, because that exposes you, right? So like the preparation is incredibly important in these processes. Number two is inclusiveness and diversity. And really that means equitable incorporation of all members of the community on an equal footing. Right? So one of the things that really
happens in many public processes is that there's a dramatic power differential, and because that power differential is so strong, it influences essentially how people participate in the process. So working in advance to figure out how to make sure that everyone shares power in the process so that the outcome can be owned by everybody. And that really comes down to one really important question is, are the people who are participating really being heard? The third is collaboration and creating a sense of shared purpose. So having facilitation and staff who really identifies those shared values and pushes them forward in the process. The fourth is kind of openness and creating a learning environment, which is one reason why I'm so happy with this forum today, because at the end of the SCS process that you recently went through, it's really the beginning of another one, right? So it's the opportunity to stop for a minute and think, how can we learn more from the people who participated in the previous processes and move forward? The fifth is transparency and trust, and that takes one-on-one time and constituency building. So one of the trademarks of this process was that there were working groups, and they were public, but there was a lot of work that went on in between the meetings to understand each other's kind of needs and goals, and somebody had to run that part of the participation process. And sometimes that means having a cup of coffee with somebody and asking them point blank, hey, what do you really need out of this? I'm not hearing it in the meetings, right? Which I think is really important. And then the sixth element, the sixth principle or value was the importance of identifying actions that really make a difference. That is, in the process, every step of the way, finding ways that people's involvement in the process truly influence the outcome and they can see it. Because if they can't see it, they don't really believe that the process is meeting their need. So I want to wrap up with two observations from this process and general observations from the public processes that we've been involved in. Number one, we need a new definition of public participation. Technology and other things may help drive that, but at the end of the day, it's about one-on-one relationships, and it's about doing the work to build those relationships. Number two is that collaboration is kind of like love and marriage. That unless you take on the values of your partner, and you take on the priorities of your partner, and their priorities become more important than yours, often, then you're going to get divorced. And that piece of it that is about love, it is about caring about someone else's priorities more important, being more important than yours, is probably the most important part about making a large scale process work. Is that it's got to give. It can't just take, you know? And I think that's a really fascinating thing that is beginning to be driven by the application of technology in planning. But ultimately, the computer and crowdsourcing ideas is not going to take the place of human interaction and human values in these processes. So, thanks.
Thank you, Steve. I'll just say, as a supervisor, the only advantage we have is everyone here gets along. We have no egos. We have no nothing.
I can feel that.
I don't know what kind of county you kidding. It sounds a little bit like Measure C, doesn't it, Mary and Jeff, and those of you that we all sat around the table and went, you want what? Well, we got this. So we're going to adjust a little bit and allow you some 10 minutes for questions for Supervisor Wiggins and Steve. Are there questions at the moment for Mr. Roberts?
For the supervisor, my name is Jeff Roberts. I work for a local development firm here. And I do participate a lot in the COG process. So I appreciate your being here and outlining this program. My understanding that HCP is not yet approved.
Correct.
But it's about 18 months to 2 years away.
We're probably 2 months away from completing all of the documents, which are essentially contracts. A couple of policy questions that need to get resolved. That's going to have to be then approved by the board and by the city. But the process has been so collaborative that there's really not much yes to fight about or guess about. And then it has to go into environmental review,
right,
which will take a year and a half.
Right. So during the time that it's being reviewed, do you allow development to occur in Placer County?
Yes. Yes.
Under the old rule, whatever the rules are today.
Yeah, so The county is a long, slender county. The third Lake Tahoe is in the county, but the growth is all down on the valley floor and up into the foothills. And as luck would have it, about 80% of the future growth and future open space preservation will occur in my supervisorial district. So City of Lincoln has a general plan and they're a partner in this. They actually did a 50-year general plan to be consistent with the time frame of the conservation plan. City of Roseville has a significant amount of growth left and it's undetermined how much they want to grow. They chose not to participate. Rockland is the other major city and it's almost built out. But in those places, development can in fact go forward.
But I think there's another element of that that's important. There's also an interim planning agreement in place that identifies mitigation ratios for conservation in the meantime that mimics what the likely conservation strategy for the HCP.
Okay, well that was one of my other two questions. So what is that cost on a per unit basis for mitigation?
That key staff person who's been living this with us for the last 16 years.
Giving a presentation later on the actual process that we're going through. But today we don't have a fixed fee to implement this conservation plan. What the agencies are doing is mimicking our conservation strategy, but the discretion lies with the agencies. Mm-hmm. So we have an agreement that says we're going to prepare this plan, projects can proceed, but it's still the agencies that hold all the cards because we're still in the development phase.
Okay.
So they're mimicking our conservation strategy and their decisions, but they are not obligated to do so yet.
But I think, Lauren, if I could send them up. Elected, I can say whatever I want, but so I think you're looking for a number, and I think the number is about $6,000 per household, give or take, but it's not refined yet. It'll be reviewed every 5 years, but it is a dependent neighborhood. It essentially, I'm confident, because there hasn't been a nuclear explosion from the development community on my house, that the neighborhood is about what it's costing currently. They won't tell us what that number is, so the best comparisons are with banks.
Yeah. Last question, how long have you been working on this?
Well, it's 14 years. So the policy part was done in 2 years. If I had to do over again, there are key things. It could have been done probably in half that time. And if I knew then what I know now, I think you could have gotten there in about 7 years. Most of the other 7 years were political years.
We'll bring you back for that phase. We went to the same elected official school. You can say whatever you want. Yes. I like that. Great. There was one more hand. Was there not another question? All right. Thank you. Now, you all will be around the rest of the afternoon. All right. So they will be here, but in the breaks you don't have, you can talk to them. In the breakout sessions. All right. So let's transition. Thank you both very much. Yay.